Ukraine's Chernobyl nuclear power plant increased possible exposure to radiation now that they've reportedly exited the area. Richard Engel with more.
Russian troops have begun to leave the Chernobyl nuclear site, which is still radioactive after the 1986 nuclear meltdown, after Russian troops began digging trenches into the contaminated soil and contaminating themselves.
The person who runs the plant said it's unknown how much radiation the troops were exposed to when they controlled the facility. The individual noted radiation particles just thrown into the air by passing vehicles raising thick dust could have gotten into the troops' systems. The staff who were there weren't exposed. Conspiracy theorist Alex Jones owes $25,000 for refusing to be deposed. A Connecticut judge denied a motion to nix that penalty, which increases each day Jones declines to appear. The InfoWars founder claimed the 2012 Newtown shooting was a hoax and had appealed to the Connecticut Supreme Court. Jim Carrey is probably retiring from show business.
6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. 7 o'clock, wrestle with myself. Loading. I'm booked.
Yesterday, the comedian and actor told Access he's done enough throughout his career. The Grinch star added it would take a script delivered by angels with a very important message to reel him back into acting. This means his new movie, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, could be his last. The film premieres in theaters next Friday. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
My heart was racing just making spaghetti. I could have waited to tell my doctor, but I didn't wait.
I was short of breath just reading a book. I could have delayed telling my doctor, but I didn't wait.
They told their doctors and found out they have atrial fibrillation, a condition which makes it about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. If you have one or more of these symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness, this is no time to wait. Contact your doctor.
Brought to you by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Is your current home loan the right fit for you? Near historically low rates combined with rising home values means that you could have more home equity than you might imagine. And if you're considering a refi, an expertly chosen loan from Loan Depot could save you thousands. Ask about our smart term loans, cash out, and over 300 loan options to find just the right mortgage loan for you. Call now, 866-888-LOAN, or go to LoanDepot.com. Loan Depot, where home means everything. Rates are subject to change. Equal housing opportunity lender. And NMLS number 174457. Licensed in all 50 states.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your Alternative Talk weather outlook for Friday and for April 1st. Mostly cloudy skies with a few sunbursts. High temperatures around 53, 54 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies and some light rain showers moving back in. Low temperatures dropping down to about 42. For the weekend, more clouds and light rain showers at times. High temperatures in the low to mid-50s. That will roll on until Monday with the wind picking up. Low temperatures this weekend in the low 40s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
You're listening to an encore presentation from the Transformation Talk Radio Network.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelt and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
So welcome to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy Obear. I could not be more excited to have Dr. Becky Martinez of Infinity consulting with me. Thank you, Becky, so much for joining.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be in this conversation with you.
Me too, and I noticed I was doing this because we talk about race. I'm much more grounded, centered. I've done much more work on my internalized dominance around race as a white person, white privilege, classism. I've done some, but growing up middle class, professional class, I've not done anywhere near the work. So I'm breathing a lot, and I invite you listeners to breathe. We're talking about engaging the taboo, getting honest about class and classism in higher education and possibly beyond, because Dr. Martinez you've not only worked in higher ed, that's when I first met you, 2002, we're coming up on our 20-year anniversary.
No.
You were in student affairs, and I've known you in your full-time equity work as a consultant, trainer, coach, author of Straddling Class in the Academy. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
And then I think there's some articles. I know we've co-done some article work. So I've just been following you, and I get to work with you as faculty at the Social Justice Training Institute a couple times a year. So I've learned with you, watched you 2 decades. Jeez Louise.
I know, right?
And just so grateful for your work in the world to help organizations change, leaders change, and to really, as you talked in your bio, hold the both and. And so if you don't mind, just letting the listeners know a bit more about you, and maybe how you came to have Class in Classism so central to currently your work in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would add, in addition to us knowing each other for 20 years in those professional capacities, that you're also my friend and mentor. And I think that that's what gets forgotten, right, is that we go, I'm reworking my bio so that I started out in a who I am in my humanity space and not what I do. And I think that that's a class reframe. As you were doing that, I was like, I'm your friend, and you're like, you're my mentor too. So I don't want us to forget that. So I'm Dr. Becky Martinez, she and hers, and I'm in Southern California, which has all of its sometimes class implications. I love ice cream and running, and I'm a proud aunt. And I'm a fiercely loyal friend, sometimes to the detriment. And I used to work in higher ed, and that's where I grew up. I often say that's how I grew up, especially as a first generation college student who grew up working class, who wanted to be a doctor because that's what you're supposed to do when you don't know any differently. And how I became so grounded in this particular area of inclusion, which is only talked about a little bit, is actually at SJTI 2. It was SJTI 2 or the renewal, and I think we called it SJTI 2 at that time. And we were working we had the opportunity to get into a dominant group and a privileged group, or a dominant group and a subordinated group. And I think I chose the dominant group, and there were 2 other people in it. And like we talked, it was interesting because we all have a similar background. And that is what we talked in about this class and this straddling space, although I don't think I had a name or we had a name for it at that time. And I was in deep pain for that entire conversation, which tears aren't new. In any place that I go, but it was this, like, guilt and shame of coming from a working class background and the shame that I felt about that, and then the guilt and shame that I felt as a middle class person, and how to, like, rectify that in my spirit and how I treated people and what I think of them. So that was my entry point in this conversation and this work, and since then it's just become something that sits deeply in my soul, because I think we don't talk about it so like authentic ways.
Mm-hmm. You're taking me back to probably a SJTI renewal before that, because we had a 5 or 6 people in the dominant group on class, and I felt guilt and shame because I was one of the few people there who grew up in class privilege, middle professional class, and now I call myself more upper middle class. And to see how many folks in higher ed, probably nonprofits, as well as maybe even K-12, I wonder how many folks also might be class straddlers now. And fewer folk maybe like me, where I've had class privilege all my life, didn't have to think about it, thought it was only about money, how much money you had. And I looked up the hill where the people that were the doctors and lawyers, and then I felt less than because we were only middle class. My mom made my clothes. I was embarrassed because I was also much heavier at the time and we didn't have money to buy new clothes. So I was looking at what I didn't have, not all that we have. And that gets me to what is class, because I sure still don't have a great understanding of it.
What I love about your story, and one of my favorite questions, and, you know, I love to ask them, is, like, what's your class story? Because we get into the complexities of that. So as I, you know, hear you, there's the reference groups that you're talking about. So, you know, up the hill, this is how I got my clothing, how I felt, and that was in reference or comparison to another group. And that's sometimes how we work class. So we may not know any differently until there is something different. And so as you know, as we engage in kind of what classes or social class identity, particularly because, you know, language changes and terms are fluid, we've added social class to there, although I use class now often because it's easier and that's where people go, is like various forms of capital. So it's not just about money and assets and what you have and what you can see. And like that's important. That's important to pay attention to, right? So there's your bank account, you own a home, you have debt, can you buy food, can you buy clothes? So like the financial piece of capital, which is where most people enter the conversation around class. And, you know, it's like social capital, cultural capital, academic capital, language capital, and how all of those different forms of capital manifest itself out. So there's like shame and guilt because of what's interesting how class works itself out is, you know, folks that grew up probably middle class plus, and I always say plus because, you know, upper middle class, wealthy, rich, owning class, and that's like those last three terms are in its own category, but can feel like guilt and shame. And then on the other spectrum, people who grew up with, like, working class or poor feel guilt and shame. So there's, like, these similar feelings, but we don't talk about them, which is, I think, pieces of the other pieces of capital that exist. So social capital, it is, you know, who you know, networking, connections. Cultural capital is what you know, so the information that you have in a particularly an academic setting or in the academy, with those two forms of capital that you want to know, like information around systems, schools, what holds names. You know, I probably wouldn't be here if I didn't know you and I was connected to SJTI and we got to work together. So like the social and the cultural capital that comes even in our relationship. And then you have the academic capital. So those three forms of capital, the ones that at least in academia we started talking about, and that was Bordeaux's work on financial, social, and cultural capital. And since then it's been expanded. And so think of linguistic capital, like how we talk. What accents folks use, can I say both and that's okay, and it's not tagged as unprofessional. We can unpack unprofessional and professional. And then you have, you know, academic capital, so where you got degrees and what those degrees are in, and how many of them do you have, and do you have an EBA or a PhD or just a master's, which I hear often in the academy. So there's so many forms of capital that just talking about in an economic and financial is a disservice. And then there's that, so how do we feel around that? You know, I love to sit in my heart. And it's like, how does that land on folks? And how do we feel around having more or less or not knowing? And that's like a place that a lot of people don't want to or are protected in their spirits to not go.
Thank you. And as I hear you, the class and the race overlay are screaming at me, especially in the academy. And I remember growing up, and I did go, took one class at a community college when I was a senior in high school, but I was kind of like, look at me, I'm so good. I never would have considered going to community college because the classist and racist beliefs that I had, oh, low-income people of color go there, I'm going to a four-year private liberal arts. And so I always believed that you had class privilege, you were smarter, better. If you didn't, you had to pull yourself by the bootstraps. And I wonder how much of those classist attitudes are still prevailing and contributing why I believe, like you in the higher ed, I'm usually one of the first to bring up class. Unless it's someone by hierarchy that's experiencing oppression and classism, staff, entry level, but to actually talk about elitism and classism and faculty, the degrees, I have an EDD that's not valued like a PhD. So it's just these gradations. So what do you think is still happening in 2001? Or 2021? I don't want to be as old as I am. I'm half joking, but not really. What do you think? Why do we not talk about class? Why? What are the barriers we create and the systemic dynamics that keep us from having authentic, engaged, disrupting conversations about class and classism?
Particularly in the academy, right? I'll start there in the academy. So even calling it the academy, people have been like, the academy sounds so class. And I was like, what is? I imagine there's several reasons we resist or ignore or don't want to talk about it. Our institutions, at least most of them, were founded in a very elitist and classist space. It's not the same, but there are similar themes around why we don't want to talk about whiteness in academia. It's a system that was set up, right, by and for people who had at least an amount of wealth. Until we developed other institutions like community colleges, right? If we think of education in a particular or a broad base, like trade schools, but in these, we'll say in the construct of a four-year institution, like, yeah, it was founded on being better than. So why do we want to talk about founded on being better than? And we carry this, like, badge of class around, you know, if it's an Ivy League school or if it carries emphasis to it, or if it has name recognition or if it has more social and cultural capital than other institutions. So why would an institution want to talk about class in ways that is damaging a reputation, or they have to shift the way that they think or engage in it, or they have to look at the tenure, like the very class tenure process? And, you know, the inequity of pay of faculty, staff, administrators, where people are, what their practices are, what spirit days are like all of those things. So it's heavy and it's a lot and it's a mirror and people get nervous. I think that's the other piece is that, like, people get nervous talking about it because then you talk about what you have or what you don't have and then it becomes really personal. And it is so, as I said, it's so intertwined with various identities. And so the first place that we go to is race, and understandably so, but also how is class, like, wrapped up in sexuality and disability, which, you know, we don't talk about disability, only in, you know, like, what's accessible. So it, like, it's really tangled. And I think similarly to how you all taught me around SJTI to pull the thread around race so we can clearly see how it shows up, we also have got to be able to pull the thread around class to see how it clearly shows up. And that gets really difficult for, I think, folks that identify, Mike Smith, BIPOC folks, right, who now have this middle class space. Because it's like, oh, that's a privileged space and it's intersecting and it's messy. And when I hear the word professional, like, I always like put that, and so many people have that themed around race, and that's such a class term. So even nowadays, I say blue collar professionals. I don't say just blue collar. Because they are folks that are blue collar are professionals, and I've been naming myself as a first generation white collar professional, because it just broadens and people will have been like, oh, me too, that's a name. But like, let's reframe professional so that it is at least as class as possible. And we can uplift people who are plumbers, because I don't know shit about plumbing and I need a plumber, and that's professional and that's valuable.
Yeah. Working with your hands, that's dirty, that's less than, that's immigrant. I mean, there's so many of these different marginalized identities that seem so intertwined over the centuries. You may have intentionally gotten quiet when you started talking about secrets, but your voice got much quieter when you said people don't want to talk about it. They feel uncomfortable. So,
oh, it's interesting for the people.
Well, I want to go there. We have, you know, maybe five-ish minutes before the break. Could you say more about what the secrets are about, that shame, that guilt? Because you have so much about you that's about healing and liberation, and I want to come back to that after the break. But why do we individually, particularly in our marginalized identities, have that shame and guilt because of our class backgrounds?
Well, we have been socialized not to talk about class. And so, you know, what the things that you don't talk about are politics, religion, and class. Mm-hmm. And so there's the direct messaging that you don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating about that is we talk about it all the time. We just have coded language. And it's like, you know, have you taken a vacation? How did you spend your weekend? I'm going to go grab a coffee, right? Do you want one also? What did you pack for lunch? What language do we use to describe? So we always talk about class, but we don't, there's no consciousness, or there's rarely consciousness around how we talk about class. And that's what, like, that's for me, like, the beauty of it is there's this language. Even the words, like, nice or fancy.
Good neighborhood.
Right, good neighborhood. I went to a fancy dinner. I drive a nice car. They have raggedy clothes. So class. And I think that that's the, I don't know if it's the tension or the dissonance that exists in that. And then people want to talk about it because they're going to talk about what folks have and don't have and what they have access to or not. And it's so very completely clear. Whereas like, oh, okay. Like, who has access to what? Who can get what? Who is believed? Like, all of those pieces can be classed.
So I was thinking about elite colleges, elite independent K-12 schools will probably say, we're disrupting classism by, you know, 30% of our monies are going to people who are low income, and yet they're not changing the culture, the climate, and look how we're helping you, and that we're so good, that philanthropic classist charity is still in me. And the other side of that, I think, is because I think of why middle, upper middle, plus class folks don't want to talk about how much we have, because then someone will say, well, how are you using your resources? Why do you keep so much? And so that fear of losing, which I think is the same of white folks and white privilege, if we really dismantle racism, we won't be able to have all that we have. Whew, we're going to be going to break soon. Any other final reflections? And I'd love you to let folks know where they can find you if they want to keep talking or have you come to their campus or organization.
So I'll give that information and then we'll see. So it's infinitymartinez.com. That's my website, but it's at Dr. Becky Martinez. That's my Twitter. That is my Instagram. My email is BeckyMartinez1@gmail. It's the number one, not spelled out one. So those are my contact ways. And there's so much that you just said there.
We'll come back. Keep going. And then you got a few minutes.
There's just this guilt and shame, and how do we work through that? I think in our dominant identities, but as we see it in, you know, play out, and while we give students money, right, or people have a particular salary, that's where folks get sucked up in that economic capital, and so we've created equity through giving you enough money. And institutions have started doing that. I think it was Opportunity Vanderbilt was the first institution that gave, if you had that financial aid, 4 years of tuition paid. And that doesn't make students feel comfortable or part of or supported. So let's give you this money, and which is awesome. So like to not be in the debt is great. And how are we creating resources so that students can talk about what their experience is or what they're struggling with? And it's not just students. It's also staff and faculty that come from working class and poor backgrounds, because they're going into a system that they've known because they have a degree or two or three, but there's the assumption that they have a working class, they have a middle class plus origin. That's a myth in higher ed. If you work in higher ed, you come from at least middle class and have to absorb their values and navigate through how they think folks should be. And there's no discussion that I don't feel comfortable or a part of or seen or heard because I didn't spend this weekend vacationing, or I didn't vacation on a plane when I was young, or I didn't have vacations. Like I worked, or we took care of ourselves during the summer because my family or people who took care of me worked. Like that's not something that we talk about, which is the assumption that we are all from at least middle class.
And again, all that shame. And so the theme of empowering, amplifying, healing, and still universities, colleges, I gave you this money, therefore you owe me. And it just hit me, I'm sure you talk about this, but the whole idea of reparations because of having universities built with enslaved labor, I wonder if there's a parallel of universities coming to terms with how they have been so classist and perpetuated classism, capitalism, and harmful, destructive global and national ways. I don't know the word for it, but I've never thought of that before. Dr. Becky Martinez, Infinity Consulting. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear. We'll be back to Transformation Change Radio after this break. I can't wait.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off. You're killing it in the mom game. But did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to the Boss Up Babe radio show, where Carissa Adkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive. Every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365DailyHustle.com. Tune into the Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I bring over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Join the discussion on the show. Learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital copy of my magazine at naturalnutmeg.com.
You have traits of ADD or ADHD? It can be hard to meet society's expectations of productivity when traditional approaches to time management and organization don't work for your unique brain. You need customized strategies. In the ADHD Self-Mastery Podcast with Bonnie Minku, you get concise, actionable solutions to help you modify your approach and achieve your goals. Learn more about Bonnie at thrivewithadd.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com. You have the courage to be seen.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. God of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, maryjanemack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
You're listening to an encore presentation from the Transformation Talk Radio Network.
Dr. Becky Martinez, we don't have enough time. I'm loving the conversation. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. We left beginning to talk about how folks that don't have a middle class plus are coming to universities, colleges, and it's just like not fitting in but forced to. Could you say more about either what the experience is, but I'm particularly also interested in, because I was swimming and perpetuating middle-class plus academia culture that actually keeps classism in place and the damage and the harm we cause when we do that. So anything in there that gets your attention?
Yeah, there's a few things. One, I talk about the notion of office hours and how that is folks from poor working class backgrounds, like we need to explain what office hours is because the value of them, because oftentimes it is we don't seek out help or support. You just like put your head down and you get your work done and you're hard working and you figure it out. And so even the notion of office hours, right? So academia has some setups that are great support systems, but we get lost in the jargon or assumption that people know what they are and don't explain them well enough. Office hours. Let's talk about what those mean and, what the value is. Another dynamic that exists in academia, and I've learned it more and I've recognized it in a more clear way, is I grew up, and many people grew up in poor working class settings or poor and or working class settings that, like, you're direct. You just say the thing. There's not all the feelings associated. And you don't hate each other at the end of it or, like, feel a certain way. And you cannot be direct and say stuff in academia, right? That's why I think we say, well, let's be intentional and strategic. Let's set up this committee. And that is really challenging for some folks who are like, why do we have to talk about this for a year and a half when we can just do the thing? Or we could just say the thing and then figure out how to do the thing. But, like, that's not what you're supposed to do because that's not playing by the rules and that's not nice and you can't be direct and people feel a certain way about that. And so as the consultant, I'm able to see it more clearly and it's thus frustrating. And I hear that all the time. I mean, we hear that all the time. Like, how many damn meetings do you have to make this decision? But you want to make sure that everybody is happy enough and they're okay enough with it and that it makes strategic sense. So let's do another assessment. I see a lot of folks challenged by this academic or systems approach to making decisions. And it's in such
a different value system than lots of other places. It's just this thing in higher ed, because, you know, I think when we work with nonprofits, that isn't as prevalent or less than I do. And definitely, it's not what you're doing when you're at the Home Depot working. Say, like, hey, here's the thing. And there's all kinds of class in that because you're being directed and told what to do. And I get that. Man, it's just like, just get it done.
Well, if I hear you, status quo. All that you just said are such great resistance strategies to keep the classist, racist, like status quo in place, to not have senior leaders, next level, maybe the next labor, feathers ruffled. And y'all are just here to serve us, because that's what poor and working class people should be doing, is serving us with our class privilege. Ugh.
Deep breath on those ones, right? And... you know, similarly to how I see race play itself out, if we have, you know, white leaders in upper administration positions, is that, like, then you got to talk about how you really show up. And so these upper-level positions come with all kinds of privilege around class. So you got to, like, talk about how you really show up, and that could be from how much you get paid, to where your office is, to where your parking spot is, to the fact that people come up to you and want to talk to you and maybe want something from you. And, like, you got to be grounded to have that conversation. And that is really difficult, just as it is for white people to, like, talk about that. It's difficult for somebody who earns $200,000 as a VP to talk about that in, like, ways that are responsible, and it's what's my responsibility as a, and I know that I'm not going to be able to give entry-level folks a $10,000 raise. Right, so, like, now you're talking about some, like, factors that impact folks' lives, and, you know, I think of, like, how do people shift whiteness? Like, how do people shift class? Does that mean I give up some of my salary? Like, there's a direct tangible then. And what does that mean? So, that means I can't afford this house, or I can't send my kid to the college that they want to go to without being in debt, or I have to change an insurance plan. And those are, like, some heavy things to talk about.
We just finished watching Dope Sick. I think it's on.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, I can't remember what it's on. Opioid crisis, Sackler family. Classism, so disgusting. And as much as I know about Appalachia, really helped me see some of the current dynamics of classism. They intentionally focused on West Virginia, Kentucky, Maine, maybe a couple others. So mostly folk of color, working class, coal, and to watch all the similar dynamics of I'm going to get mine. And so the folks that were fighting against the Sacklers would get bought out. And so they were the FDA or wherever they were. And it's like, don't push too much, and then we'll hire you at, you know, $300,000 to $400,000. And so I just wonder how many folks who move into those upper echelons of $200,000 plus, relationship with legislatures, corporations, see themselves on boards. And that is so seductive for folks who grew up with class privilege. And I wonder if it's even more seductive, or at least very, for folks that didn't. And I could be wrong, but that fear of sliding back, or, as I've learned with you and some of our other friends, it's not just me. It's like I got an extended family that I'm supporting. And so it's just such a complex web for folk.
So complex. And, you know, class can really be disguised. For, and that probably would probably more from an upward mobility, what you have kind of space. Because people can be driving certain things, but they could be in a ton of debt or they could be taking care of extended family. But there's the assumption, right? So as I do more work around social class, there's three ways in which it exists. And I would say, like, in my body, there's three ways that class exists for everybody else. So there's your class of origin, you know, so how you grew up, what you had, but what also your, like, value system was, and, you know, what you think of the hard work and rest, which isn't part of part of our narrative at all. And then you have your current class. So that's, you know, the capital. So I always say I'm middle class, like I'm middle class from an economic capital, maybe middle class, like upper middle class. And I'm probably upper class in other people's capital. Linguistic, academic, social, cultural, at least when it comes to higher ed. If I were going to, like, corporate world, that wouldn't be the same. But in academia, I'm clearly, like, maybe low upper with those different forms of capital. And then you have your perceived class. And so, like, how you are perceived and then what people put on you. And you're navigating we're navigating that all of the time, whether we know it or not. Right? And what are we playing into or not? What am we pushing back or not? And then you have an institution with 3,000 people, and then you're trying to, you know, navigate all of that. So it's a lot. As you said, the complexity and the complication of that. And I like me a good steakhouse in some friendly way. And so it is, huh? Like, what is in my means? What is too much? How do I contribute in other ways? What do I support? But also the question, I think, especially as a consultant, and so this is where salaried is different than what we do, is like health insurance and retirement and a just in case of a pandemic that happens and we don't know what's going to happen. So there's like all of these pieces to class it's like, okay, so this is what I can make, or, you know, and I don't have the same trajectory of retirement that people who get retirement from their organizations have, or at least most, not everybody.
Or had some inheritance when elders passed on. There's two more things I'd love to get to.
Okay, let's get to it.
And this is a new thought. Are there ways that Academy needs to change that are really grounded in the poor and working class ways of being? What do we need to shift to, we got these strategic plans. You know, you said directness and self-care. You inferred that wasn't necessarily a part of how you grew up. But I know you so are talking about healing and self-care now. Are there other ways of being that just may not be literally on the screen of folks in academia who have class privilege in all those three areas you described? Mm-hmm. What are some ways out? What are some ways to dismantle, recreate, liberation?
Mm-hmm. You know, my dear colleague and friend and co-author, Dr. Sponja Arvon, we talk about YOSO's community cultural welfare model, because there's not yet a model to, like, a development theory or a model to support working class, like, poor and working class students.
Wow.
Yeah. Yet. Not yet. Yeah. So we'll put yet in the universe. And so just like other marginalized identities, we borrow. And this particular model talks about, it was written for, at that time, Hispanic students in college to reframe. And so oftentimes our models and marginalized identities are from deficit models and flips the script to talk about asset base. And so what are poor and working class people whether that's students or faculty, staff, administrators, and that's the class of origin, bringing to campus that is a value and an asset rather than a deficit. So, yeah, there's some language and some jargon that we need to understand. And, like, we're bringing, like, resistant capital to space, right, or navigational capital, so knowing how to navigate outside of higher ed to get into higher ed, whether that's the job or the admissions as an undergraduate student. So how are we looking at the various forms of capital as a value or an asset coming into the academy? And I think that, like, I really appreciate that reframe rather than a deficit. I was just last week talking with cabinet at a very elite liberal arts college in the Northeast. And what is the Northeast called again?
The whitest part of the country? Is that what you meant?
Oh, it was pretty white. But, like, so I share this screen of words, so like a Wordle, word cloud of terms that I have gathered in my own experience or through sessions, and I have people react to it. And one of the words there is options. And the university president was like, I can't not talk about options. It's my responsibility. I said, absolutely, it's your responsibility. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't use any of this language that's out there. And I want us to pay attention to language and terms that are out there that are fast, options being one of those. And it was a lovely conversation that we had for her to talk about options in a more clear way around fast. And even being able to coach faculty or staff or students of, because what we often say is, here is what you need, as opposed to, what do you think you need? And here are options, and then you choose. And, you know, so from a system space, you know, here are all of the options that exist. We're not going to tell you how to be or what to do or what you need to do next. And here is the reality of those options. But we don't do that. We coach from a upward mobility, so the myth that everybody goes and enter that, you know, everybody wants to make more money. It's like, no, maybe it's about going back to the community. Maybe it is about having a different status. But the way that the structure is developed is that that's what it is. In fact, and I don't know the intricacies to this, but she had shared with me that the next round of college rankings for liberal arts, who's that sort realm, is going to be based on social mobility, but meaning, right, like where students, what students do afterwards, is going to be how they're ranked.
Yeah.
Which is all kinds of just, I mean, it's just further, it gets us into class spaces. It's like, oh. So if people want to become, go into business or corporate, right, or lawyers, right, or engineers or money makers, they're going to get a higher ranking than if somebody wants to go into nonprofit organizing or education, and that's going to be the lesser rank. And I know that that's already a part of the structure, but for that to be, I think that that was implicit, but for that to be so explicit now is just gross negligence. And that's what we can do in those higher ed institutions, like cabinet members, people with positional power, say no. Right? Like, talk about that. Talk about what that means. But then they've got alumni and donors and students that they want to attract their families, or they've got legacies. And so if we want to flip the script, let's have that conversation, leaders that know that that's not okay.
Love it. And legislatures, because it's career ready. I see it in community colleges, 4-year, and the states that give money to places that say there's more success. You know, minor thing could be senior leaders say, I want a parallel on competencies. Here are the 21st century skills that all people need to have when they graduate. Measure us on that. If you won't change this, at least add all these leadership, community, social justice, equity. I'm learning so much with you, Dr. Becky Martinez, as I do every time we talk, especially when you give me clear, direct feedback. It's part of our friendship as well. So here's my wonder. I've been working, you know, dismantling racism in the classroom, hiring practices, workplaces, creating inclusive. I haven't, except tangentially, brought in class. How could people learn and then be a part of dismantling classism in the classroom, in advising, in hiring practices? I'm not even talking tenure yet, but that would be another one of those systemic performance management, just work climate and teams. In our few minutes we have left, what are some thoughts of what is possible?
The first part is you gotta, like, know that it exists. And so similar to how I've learned from you, Jamie, and Vernon, is you gotta be able to do your own work. So, like, enter it through not only what information do I know, which is important, but, like, how does class exist in my consciousness of how I operate? And that could be how I feel, right, and what I talk about, but also leading to, how do we not do spirit days with the expectation that people buy their own clothes for that? Or that if you don't go to the happy hour or potluck after hours, it's maybe that you have a second job or that you need rest because you're so exhausted. And we don't, you know, we don't really talk about rest like a intentional care practice in academia because we're about production. So even like, how do we look at what our expectations are around production? And how do we coach like our senior leaders around that? Because that's what we do. I mean, I get the end result of the degree, but like how we get there is a whole different phase. And how do we, like, we are not machines, and our institutions are built like machinery of humans, especially as we think about a class space. And so what we need to do is, again, enter at the individual. What do I know? What's my information? What's been my experience? How do I name myself? How do we talk about it? How do we train around it? I mean, in the straddling class book, that's some of the implications were, like, people just want folks to start talking about it because we don't even do that. So we can't go to systems change if we can't even recognize, like, what is in the room. And then we can, like, be more clear on, like, policies and practices. And my experience is we're just in the infancy stage. Around, like, noticing. I don't even think we're naming yet right now. We're just noticing and getting some information.
And maybe talking, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Talking to people we feel safe with, kind of like how race was talked about, the white folks never really, so really getting it centered in the conversation. So I'm imagining strategic plan implementations, dismantling racism, classism, other forms of oppression, creating true liberation, but then leaders have to know why. I heard this last week. There's the great resignation. Someone said they heard the great reassessment.
Ooh,
isn't that nice? The great reassessment. I think they said as individuals are reassessing, do I want to work in this toxic, exploitive, capitalistic, classist, racist work environment anymore? Do I want to do something else? Is there any place better? I challenge folks to think that systems, organizations, we need to do a reassessment. How do we attract, retain, develop, promote folks that truly can live into the dream that we have of true liberation, strategic plan, equity, inclusion, and to have class and classism centered with race? Because that's my only other fear is white people listening will be like, oh, good, now I don't have to talk about race and drop it off. So I hope white folks, if you're hearing, that's not what we're doing, and you heard me, like, put them both in there. How do we keep race-centered while also talking about classism? Because this country, as you know, listeners, I'm hoping you realize, was really built on the intersection of classism, exploitation, racism, genocide, manifest destiny, colonization. We could keep going. So not either or, as Dr. Becky Martinez says, embracing the both and. As we close, any final thoughts, and how can folks find you?
Yeah, so ask yourself, what's my class story, and delve into that. Talk about it at a meeting. Bring some consciousness and awareness that isn't just from a theoretical or model framework, because that's where I entered this work, is knowledge, which is really critical. I didn't want to get into the what it meant to me personally, because there was such pain there. And as I think about healing my class story, that's probably why I've done so much work around class. It's so meaningful to me. So meaningful. And I just, like, pay attention so that you can then be more clear of how you show up and what your policies are and your practices are. But, like healing work is necessary in class spaces, and allow ourselves some rest to do it.
Right.
Allow yourself grace and rest to do it.
Grace
and rest, right? And joy. Let's have some joy in our learning also, and in our transformative work, because otherwise, shit, it's going to be overwhelming and feel burdensome. And like, I could hold both of those at the same time. You can contact me at my email, BeckyMartinez1@gmail.com. I would feel some kind of way about that, because it's one, and I'm like, that's the next one that was available. And at Dr. Becky Martinez for Twitter and Instagram, and then Infinity Martinez Consulting. So that's how I'll say. And then I have some publications, mostly around class, and I hope to have more.
You will. As I'm hearing you, I'm just reminded that cross-race conversations in the beginning, white folk were not able to show up effective, and we needed parallel space, white accountability groups, BIPOC, healing space, empowerment space, naming the truth space, and folk of color were probably much more ready to come together than whites were. So I think it might be something similar. Healing space for folks who've experienced classism still are. Maybe some space just for straddlers, because that might be a different experience. And clearly, I'm feeling more energy about creating, holding space for folks in our privileged identities on class, and really looking at how we perpetuate, similar to what I do with white folk. Thank you for helping me find some energy. Dr. Becky Martinez, my friend, my colleague, my teacher, be gentle, be fierce, is so you. I love you dearly, and I'm so grateful for you and the world. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, friend. I'm sending you lots of love across the screen.
If you've been following me, he's been on several times. You don't want to miss the Reverend Doctor. You all have a great, great healing month. Take good care.
Take care.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.